Morning. As we begin today, I want to share a word with you from the Gospel of Mark. It's the story of Jesus and his disciples, his closest friends. Hear these words today. On that day when evening had come, Jesus said to them, "Let's go across to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him with them in the boat just as he was. Other boats were there with him. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that the boat was already being swamped. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" He woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." Then the wind ceased, and there was a dead calm. He said to them, "Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith?" And they were filled with awe and said to one another, "Who is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" This is the gospel reading today. Well, I have a can of shaving cream for each of you. That's how we're going to begin. It's just so wonderful to be with children because they are unpredictable and they have a tendency to show us that our plans are fleeting, right? I had a plan, and it was not to be a polarizing public figure talking about faith and politics in the world. If you're here and that's your plan, you need prayer and a better plan, right? My name is John. I've been a local church pastor for the past 22 years, and during that time, I've been trying to do the work of sort of excavating Jesus, being a spiritual archaeologist, to try to retrieve Jesus from the layers of history and tradition and dogma, to see what is left, that elemental thing about following Jesus. What does it really mean to be a Christian? And I wrote a book called A Bigger Table, and the blessing of that has been that I've been able to travel all throughout the country for the past year, meeting congregations, being in new communities, and talking about the things that matter so deeply to us. And most of that time, I'm traveling on a plane. And that would be good news for a lot of people, but not so much for me. I don't do really well on airplanes historically. You know, because I'm on the plane and I'm realizing that I'm in a large metal tube hurling through space, and I begin to get anxiety, right? I was flying to Albuquerque, New Mexico not long ago, and I was having a pretty good flight, as good as one can have when they're sure that they're going to die in an airplane, right? So I was in my little elementary-sized chair, my grammar school-sized chair, right? And I had my little Dixie cup of soda and my Barbie doll-sized bag of pretzels, you know, and I had some music on, and I'm enjoying myself, and my enjoyment is interrupted by the voice of the captain. And I know it's the captain because he says, "Hi, folks, it's the captain." And he says, "I want the flight attendants to return to their seats. I'm going to ask you to put on your seatbelts because we're about to hit a little chop." Did you hear that word? Chop. I knew what that word meant. I knew that it wasn't good news for me. And he went on to talk about a weather system that we were approaching. And again, he said, "I just want you to know it's going to get a little choppy." And see, choppy, I knew, is captain speak for we are about to be shaken like a snow globe in the hands of an angry toddler. Right? Choppy means I'm about to contemplate my mortality one more time while wedged between two strangers. Yeah? Choppy means I'm about to make all sorts of promises to God about what I'm going to do when we land safely, promises I don't intend to keep, right? But the pilot, in his matter-of-fact way, was telling us this. Turbulence is coming. And if you're a Christian, that idea is familiar to you because in the Gospel of John, Jesus is talking to his disciples. He's encouraging them. He's telling them about what is going to happen after he leaves them. And he says, I say these things to you because in this world, you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world. So Jesus is telling those who would follow after him in the work of mercy and compassion and love and justice, if you are going to try to live like me, turbulence is coming. And so I suppose I've flown here from Raleigh, North Carolina, to tell you, friends, turbulence is coming. Actually, I'm a bit late, aren't I? Turbulence actually took the earlier flight out. I mean, no one has had any turbulence on their way to this building in their lives, no? No shaking you've ever experienced. See, if I say that word turbulence and you begin to think about it, I bet you can name exactly who and what is the source of your current turbulence. I bet you can name the shaking perfectly, right? You can describe exactly what is causing you to have unrest in your heart. And it's we can name that these are turbulent times in our country, right? Most of us at any given moment, we're weathering personal storms. We're always experiencing the profound shaking of being human. As we live alongside people and we walk into our true identities, as we love people, as we engage the world, as we face injustice and bigotry, we are going to experience turbulence in the forms of opposition and of conflict and of difficulties. Things are going to bring us worry. Things are going to bring us anxiety. Things are going to cause us grief. And what we have to ask ourselves today, in a world that is filled with turbulence, are we going to be peace givers or fear bringers? You see, because turbulence and fear often come as a package deal, don't they? The storms come and they create anxiety in us. And when turbulence comes, we have the opportunity to choose peace or fear. And fear can be pretty persuasive, can it? Fear knows what buttons to push in us. Fear knows our weaknesses, our doubts. Fear knows all our inner demons. This is true of the actual storms that come in our house. When thunderstorms come, I live with some people and I live with some animals, and they have different responses to storms. I could always tell when a storm is coming because I will look for my dog and my dog will not be anywhere, and I will find the dog in the bathtub. And I say, "Oh, a storm's coming." It's like she's a little furry meteorologist. My daughter, who is now 8, she has the opposite response. She doesn't get frozen, she becomes frantic, right? She hears that thunder and it begins to unsettle her, right? And her heart races and she starts to cry and she starts to get nervous. Two different responses to fear, right? Being paralyzed or being frantic. Fear is this universal experience we all have. None of us in this room are immune to it. None of us can escape its debilitating side effects, no matter how hard we try to fortify ourselves, no matter how defensively we try and live, no matter how earnest our faith, fear is ever present. Our politics, our religion, the color of our skin, the amount of zeros in our bank accounts, none of it fully insulates us from the terror that can visit at times through people, through circumstances. And the positively gut-wrenching thing I found about fear later in my life is that we never totally abandon fear. Our fears just mature along with us. I want you to think about the stuff you feared when you were 5 years old. I don't think you're probably afraid of those things anymore, right? When I was 5, I was deathly afraid of one of the Sesame Street Muppets. I'm not going to tell you which one it is. I don't want to prejudice you. But I would have terrible nightmares about this Muppet wanting to come after me. Like, how terrible is that, right? But I can tell you something, friends. As I stand here today, I'm 49 years old, I have overcome my fear of Muppets. We've made peace, right? Our childhoods may have been plagued by vampires and ghoulish monsters beneath the bed, right? Those seem largely ridiculous to us now, don't they? Except for circus clowns, I'm still afraid of those, right? But we don't outgrow fear as we get older. We don't let ourselves off the hook from fear as we become adults. We just trade in the terrors for more age-appropriate models. I think about it. We leave behind creepy baby dolls and shadowed boogeymen in the closet, but we pick up new fears, don't we? We pick up fears of financial disaster. We pick up fears of relational collapse. We pick up fears of nuclear war, of dying alone. We pick up fears of worrisome spots on CAT scans. And as a result of this ever-maturing fear, we are equally susceptible to a poverty of courage and a wealth of fear. There's a song that I've loved since I was a teenager. It's called Kid Fears, and the lyrics say, "Are you on fire from the years? What would you give for your kid fears? What would you give for those small things, those inconsequential things?" Because you look back on those smaller fears and you're almost nostalgic about them, aren't you? But not the things that terrify you presently. Because the things that terrify you presently are massive, and they're often feeling insurmountable to you. As you sit here today, there is shaking going on in you that you don't think you can withstand. Fear is this equalizer, because no matter what happens, there are these two effects on us. This being frozen, this being paralyzed, unable to move, or being frantic, unable to rest. And I don't know what the fear has done in you lately. Whether it's made you unable to move or unable to rest. But I want you to know that both of those things, they're not worthy of you. They are not God's desire for you, that you be unable to move or unable to rest. See, God's deepest desire for you is a peace in the middle of the storms that you're facing. I've been reading a book called Jesus and the Disinherited by an African-American theologian named Howard Thurman. And Thurman talks about fear, and he says all fear, it's fear is universal, and it's ever-present, but not all fear is created equally. Because he says not everyone experiences fear the same way. Because he said that fear that oppressed communities face are far greater than the fears many of us take for granted. He says that there's a helplessness that comes with being in a vulnerable community. And he says these words: "The ever-present fear that besets the vast poor, the economically and socially insecure, is a fear of still a different breed. It is a climate closing in. It is like the fog in San Francisco or London. It is nowhere in particular, yet it is everywhere." When people experience fear day after day, they begin to feel, not only is this thing in front of them insurmountable, but they begin to feel like the whole system is against them. So think about marginalized communities right now and understand that there is a fear that if you are a white person, you probably don't understand. See, privilege is a fear barrier. It is an insulator. I'm a straight, white, Christian male. I've got the privilege bundle, right? I have every bit of ease and comfort that this world offers. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm not going to experience extreme trauma. It just means I'm never going to understand what it's like to be a person of color walking through this world. It doesn't mean I'm not going to face fear and tragedy and pain. It just means I'll never get what it's like to be a Muslim living in this country at this place in time. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to have terrors inside me, things that keep me up at night. It just means I'll never know what it's like to be a woman walking through this world. And so as someone with privilege, and anyone in this room who has it, our jobs are to leverage that privilege to be a peace giver and not a fear bringer. Because we can see the damage that comes when people leverage fear, can't we? We can see what happens when people allow the storms within them. And we can see what happens when people cause storms for others. So where does fear come from? It comes from the feeling that we can't control our circumstances, right? I enjoy controlling the way things work. And when I can't do that, I have to fill that gap with something. I'm going to fill it with fear. That's why the turbulence on the airplane is so terrifying to me, because I realize that I can't change my current conditions, right? I was getting on the plane to Albuquerque that day, and I texted my host who was waiting for me. I said, "Plane's getting ready to take off." And she texted me back what she thought was encouragement. She texted these words. You've heard them before. You've said them. She texted these words: "Okay, be safe." I texted back, "I'm just going to be sitting here." You tell that to the pilot and the weather. See, the pilot and the weather are outside of me, and it's easy to think that my peace or my fear rests in those things outside of me that I can't control, but that's not true, is it? I can't affect the pilot or the weather, but I do have control in the turbulence. I can control my response to it. I can alter my inner weather. This is what it means to be a person of faith. To look at what's happening outside me and decide that it is not going to change the inside of me. The story that I read you, it's a living parable about living with fear. Jesus has these disciples, these students, these young people, and he invites them into a boat. He said, it's going to be a three-hour tour. What could go wrong, right? And they get in the boat, and everything's great. They're with Jesus. It's really awesome. They're going to write about this thousands of years later. And the storm comes, right? And they, as happens in our lives, when storms come, panic comes, because we're never really ready for the winds and the waves, are we? There are things right now waiting for us that we don't realize are coming, and we're never going to see them coming. And even though they know Jesus, even though they know his heart, they've seen him do beautiful, miraculous things, they are filled with fear because they allow what they see to make them forget what they know. And I wonder right now if you have forgotten some things you know because you're so focused on what you see. I wonder if you started telling yourself a different story based on all that's in front of you and you've forgotten the deepest things that you once knew. The disciples are freaking out in the middle of the chaos, and they look for Jesus to literally bail them out, and he's power napping in the back of the boat on a cushion. The reason why Jesus is napping is not because he doesn't care, it's because he knows who he is. That's why the pilot of my plane is not freaking out by the turbulence, because he understands it, right? He has a knowledge of it that I don't have. He has the turbulence right-sized. The challenge you and I have with the threats that we face is to right-size them, is to not see them exponentially larger than they actually are, right? Is to shrink them down to their proper size. And to understand that we have access to a peace that is greater than that thing that we fear. The question isn't whether we're going to be placed in storms or not. The question is how much of those storms we're going to allow to be placed within us. How much of the exterior threats are we going to allow inside? Are we going to be internally turbulent in profoundly turbulent times? Because Howard Thurman says of oppressed people who are experiencing fear, he says the accumulated exposure to danger and threat and urgency begins to actually change them. It begins to alter how they feel about themselves. It begins to alter their behavior. They begin to find coping mechanisms. And I bet you have found coping mechanisms for the things that terrorize you today. I had a bully in high school. I was in ninth grade, and he was a senior. And I learned something about my school. I learned where his locker was. And I knew I wanted to figure out a way to get to where I needed to go, and I needed to go around his locker, even if it meant going a much longer way, right? I had begun to change my behavior because I wanted to avoid the pain. And every one of us does that, right? When our outer circumstances begin to change our internal condition, or when they alter our behavior or change our plans or edit our dreams or cause us to second guess ourselves, then the fear is now within us. And I bet you can recognize the symptoms of your fear. Irritability, impatience, physical illness, eating emotionally, addictive behavior, the inability to be present to people who love you. Obsession with social media, being fixated on how sideways everything has gotten, how horrible it is. I don't know if you've seen any of those things in you, but I've seen them in me. See, the fear bringers in our world say you are unworthy, you're unwanted, you're incapable, you're unloved, you're outmatched. These things are insurmountable, but the peace givers say you are strong and you are safe and you are loved and you are valuable. And you will see the other side of this journey. For Howard Thurman and for Jesus, fighting fear is a matter of identity. It's knowing who you are. It's knowing whose you are. It's knowing those things that cannot be taken away from you, no matter the circumstances. That is where the peace lies. Howard Thurman says there's but a step from being despised to despising oneself. Do you know what that's about? In other words, when we begin to consent to the fear bringers, we begin to believe the lies, we begin to partner with our bullies, that fear gets in us, we begin to hate ourselves as much as other people hate us. Whether your turbulence today is experienced and delivered by a cruel family member or a former friend or a stranger on social media or a predatory politician or a brimstone preacher or a system that is corrupt, remembering who you are and whose you are is critical to keeping your peace. Remember, the disciples, they're freaking out and Jesus is sleeping. See, friends, God is not overwhelmed by the things that overwhelm you. God is not taken aback by the adversity that you face. God is not surprised by your fear, by your doubts, by your existential free fall. None of it catches God by surprise, and none of it is making God lose faith. See, the disciples wake Jesus and they ask a question that we ask of God, even if we don't believe in God. When things go wrong, we say, God, don't you care about us? The disciples say, Jesus, don't you care if we drown? And Jesus says to them the same thing he says to us today. On this journey that I've invited you to, the menu options are short. There is fear or there is faith. There is fear or there is peace. That's it. See, fear and peace cannot inhabit the same space in your heart, and so you have to decide what you're going to let there. Because the truth of this story is there is arrival on the other side. You've experienced it, right? You sit here today and you can look back at turbulence you experienced in the past that you thought you couldn't make it through. And you're here today and you see retrospectively what has been happening in your life, right? You see what God has done. You see how much stronger you are. You see how much more wise you are, right? Can you trust that that is going to be true about the storms that you face presently? Can you trust that there will be peace and there will be awe and wonder on the other side? The most common command in the text of our Christian faith is do not fear, and it's the one we least abide by. We are so easily shaken. We are so easily terrified. We so easily forget what we know because of what we see. Everyone around you, friends, the people you share the grocery store line with and the people you pass in traffic, the people you're sitting next to at work, the people in your kitchen, they're all experiencing storms. They're all fighting the shaking that comes from being human, and they're all trying to find peace when fear seems to be overpowering them. You need to be the kind of people who bring fear to those, or bring peace to those who are being shaken. You need to be the peace givers in this world who steady people who are in turbulence. I told you that my daughter, she used to get frantic when storms would come. And I remember one day she was screaming and crying, and I said to her, okay, here's what we're going to do. Daddy's going to take you outside on the porch, and we're going to sit on the porch. And we sat in this chair, and she was trembling and crying, and I began to tell her about how the storms work and what was happening, and her body slowly began to still, and her heart rate began to slow, and I could feel her breathing go back to normal. And now, 2 years later, whenever we hear thunder, she said, Dad, let's go out and sit in the storm. And it's one of our greatest bonding times, because what I did for her was I helped her right-size her fears, and I let her know that I would be present with her in those fears. This is the truth today, that the fears are not insurmountable, that you do have access to a peace that is greater, and that you are not alone in the shaking you experience. So my prayer for you is that you may have your fears right-sized, that you may be a peace giver in this world and not a fear bringer, that you may find rest in your storms, that you may not allow the turbulence around you to create a storm within you. And may you one day realize that your present shaking, as terrible as it all feels, in the eyes of God is just a little chop. Peace to you, friends.